Moto Casino, America's social casino.
Welcome to Moto Casino, where the excitement never ends. With thousands of the hottest free-to-play social casino games, fastest payouts, and the best promotions in the industry. No tricks or gimmicks. Owned and operated in the USA.
Moto Casino is a free-to-play social casino. No purchase necessary. 21 plus to play. Void where prohibited.
Sign up today for a generous welcome bonus.
Moto Casino, America's social casino.
Download the Moto Casino app today.
COTA salutes those who served. Veterans Ride Free Tuesday, November 11th. And every other day of the year, our veterans and active duty military personnel get a 50% discount on all fares. It's all part of COTA's ongoing commitment to show appreciation for your selfless service. To ride at no cost on fixed routes, tell your bus operator that you're a veteran or use code VET2025 in the app to use COTA Plus. Veterans Ride Free on Tuesday, November 11th for Veterans Day. Veterans get a 50% discount every day on COTA. Plan your ride and learn more at coda.com/trip planner.
Welcome to another edition of 100% Canucks on a Friday. Landon Ferraro is in Toronto. John Shannon's in Toronto. Well, there you go. What's it like to be in the be the big TV star this week? Come on now.
It's been a lot of fun. I'll be honest. It was, it's like you're kind of, even though you're doing NHL games in Vancouver, and I love doing the intermission panels, but it's like you're kind of getting called up from the American League to the big boy club, come to Toronto. And it was a lot of fun. They were really welcoming and made it as smooth as it could be. It's a different animal here, but it's been a blast. I've had a ton of fun. I'm back on tonight before getting back to Vancouver to, Saturday morning and doing the radio color for Vancouver, Montreal.
Okay, so to be honest, how much time in the makeup chair?
It was longer than I would have liked. There's a lot of coverage up here with more lights. So I will say that was the first time I ever had to get makeup put on. And yeah, I had a good little chuckle at myself. It is what it is. But I will say, I liked how I looked after it.
By the way, our guest today is Kirk McLean, who everybody in Vancouver knows and was an integral part of one of the great Stanley Cup runs that the Canucks had in 1994, and I'm sure has some pretty good stories about that and his life after being traded to Vancouver. But we better talk about quickly the five-game trip ended with a loss in Nashville last night, going 3-2. And in my opinion, the way they played last night in Nashville, there is some level of moral victory when you consider how banged up the hockey club is, and coming home and getting ready for Montreal on Saturday, this team isn't as bad as I think a lot of people anticipated at this point.
No, and I mean, that's a tough five-game road trip under any circumstance. Like, it's a decent amount of travel, and you're playing some pretty good teams. Then they get running into some injury trouble, and of course, it's a lot down the middle. And so you have to call up, Sasson was already there for a couple. Then Neil Zaman comes back up. All of a sudden you go from, a center ice position where, Rutherford and Alvin have been very vocal since the end of last season that they'd like to find some more depth. And now you're running three young guys. Amon's has, a decent amount of experience at the NHL level, but you'd still put him in that younger guy category. And having to move lines around and figure it out, I think they did a pretty good job. They got to be happy with how they got through the road trip. And, last night you could see a bit more, especially as the game went along, that, the gas was out of the tank a little bit and guys having to play bigger roles, play bigger minutes. I've mentioned it before. I'm a big Max Sasson fan. His speed adds an element that is needed in Vancouver, and I think he's going to continue to get better. He had a beautiful goal last night. I thought that's where they made a good adjustment in the game of not trying to kind of move up the ice piece by piece. They started to stretch out the zones a bit more, and Sasson's goal was a benefactor of that. He stretches out. They make a long, long, nice pass. He protects the puck, beats his guy, and goes five hole with it. So, like you said, I think there's some moral victories in there. Mm-hmm. But at the same time, moral victories don't get put up on the standings list. So they're going to be right back to work against Montreal here. And when you're in the dressing room, it doesn't matter who's in, who's out. You want to win. You want your team to do well. You want to be a part of that. So it's a real good opportunity for a lot of guys to play elevated roles and show what they can do with those elevated minutes.
And the challenge will be coming off of a five-game road trip. That first game at home after is always a bear. It is always a bear.
And Montreal's not happy with how their game ended against Edmonton as well, right? So I couldn't believe it. I'm like, if that's an unsportsmanlike penalty, I would have gotten 57 of them a year.
You have to think there was more to it than that. Something had to be said, or something earlier in the game, and he had been warned not to do it. You have to think.
You really hope so.
Well, you really hope so. Yeah.
Because that was pretty light. And I mean, that was one of the first games McDavid really kind of took over this season again. And man, when he gets going, it's different.
It certainly is. Well, I'll tell you what, we're going to have some fun with Kirk McLean, who has made his impact in Vancouver with his playing career and post career, as we will talk about with him at some point. That's Lennon Ferraro. I'm John Shannon. Kirk McLean coming up on 100% Canucks.
Shoot, score, win, repeat. On the ice and online. Keep the energy going with NHL Game Zone, the ultimate hockey hub for free-to-play games, prizes, and nonstop competition. Take your best shot with games like NHL Lines, Bingo, Bracket Challenge, and more. Challenge yourself and battle your friends and hockey fans worldwide. Play games for chances to win awesome NHL prizes. NHL Game Zone, your one stop for hockey free-to-play gaming. Play today at nhl.com/gamezone. Terms and conditions apply.
Welcome back to 100% Canucks, joined by Kirk McLean, the architect of one of the great runs of Vancouver Canuck history in 1994, and certainly a crowd favorite, a member of the Ring of Honor. Kirk, welcome to the show.
Thank you for having me. We finally made it happen.
Yeah, we finally made it happen. Well, you know what? It was kind of like your career.
Yeah.
you started in New Jersey, and then you finally had a chance. We figured it out how to make it work in Vancouver. I've got to ask you, Thatcher Demko, just before we talk about your career, Thatcher Demko, you're being a goalie, I'm sure you study goalies. What makes him so effective? What makes him so good?
Well, I study them, but I don't really study them, if you know what I mean. I'm too busy doing other things with the club. But yes, I mean, obviously I get to see Thatcher game in, game out. And listen, he's a world-class goaltender that has had some injury problems, which we all know, and serious injury problems. So if he can find a way to maintain good health and or if he does have a little tweak here or there, keep it to a dull roar, if you will, and play through it. I mean, without a doubt, at the moment, they certainly need their goaltending, not just him, but Lankinen as well, because of, the injuries that are happening in front of them.
So when it comes to playing the game in 2025 versus when you played, is there a difference in the position now?
Well, absolutely. I mean, the way the goaltenders play now, the average size is what, 6'3", 6'4", maybe. They play most of it in the butterfly position. They're amazing athletes, the way they can move laterally in their butterfly and, push off vertically out into cutting down the angle, if you will. It blows me away. There's no chance in hell that I would be able to do that, even back in my day. We were taught to stand up as much as you could and cut the angle down. If you had to go down on the butterfly, you could use it. And of course, The two pad slide was kind of a desperation move. As you see a lot of goaltenders now, when they lunge, they lunge a lot for desperation. And you know, I think that's where you see a lot of the injuries come from, because that's kind of they're in an unnatural position to begin with. And then they have to do this quick lunge. And I cringe every time, no matter who the goaltender is, that they're not going to blow their hammy out or their groin. I mean, it looks like it hurts when they're making the save.
Do you think, like, for everything you just kind of laid out there, do you think there's an opportunity for a goalie now to come along? Like, you know, Vasilevskiy was probably the last one to really kind of take over in mm-hmm. this sense, but like, can they handle playing a major amount of games like you guys used to be able to do?
Well, you think they would, because the travel's better, like 100% better. Their nutrition is better. Their sports science is better.
Hold on, nutrition is better. You're telling me that all those burgers you ate, really the way to do it?
When we were going on the road, we would practice and then we'd race to Arby's or McDonald's to grab some before we jumped on the commercial flight. And then we usually had to have a layover in Chicago or Minnesota or something like that. Where now they, you know, they have their team meals in their locker room and or on the flight. And you know, the management, the coaching staff, they're very good at maintenance days they have now. They have mandatory days off. I believe it's 2 days on the road, 2 days at home each month. So we had to beg for a day off. We would fly in. There's rules where when they fly back after a road trip, there's no practice. So there's plenty of time to get rest in it. And it confuses me sometimes, mainly because of the position that teams get themselves in, where they still, you know, refuse to play a goaltender back to back. I don't know why, especially if it's a short trip, if they're only going from New Jersey to New York or New York to Boston. I mean, it's not a long trip, and usually can get enough rest. I know you kind of want to weigh the workload the night before, but come on. I mean, it's the players got to do it. Why can't the goaltenders do it?
You sound like Connor Hellebuck, because Connor Hellebuck would play every night.
Well, I mean, they're big guys. They should be able to handle it. I know there's a lot of stress on the body. The game isn't as physical against the goaltenders now either, because they're protected by the rules. You know, the players can't crash a net. They can't fall on top of you, accidentally fall on top of you, whatever it may be. You know, it's the modern day game. I guess you want to have both goaltenders going just in case something happens. It's tougher to, as you know, with the salary cap, if the number one goalie goes down, it's tougher to make a trade to get another guy in.
When you were young, like, did you always want to be a goalie? Did you know that from the start?
Absolutely not. I started as a forward. I was a left winger in house league hockey. And prior to that, just a full year of hockey school, just learning the game and working on my skills. I just kind of literally fell into the position where I think it was my second year of house league hockey where we needed a goalie halfway through the year. And, you know, I gave it the hands up along with one other person and really enjoyed it and had success at it and stuck with it. So, you know, growing up in Toronto, you know, my heroes were Davey Keon, Daryl Sittler, Jacques Plante, Bernie Parent, you know, then Paul Mateer came along. So I really, you know, emulated myself and, after Jacques and Bernie, to be honest with you, that's kind of who I stuck with. Even when, you know, Jacques was at the end and then Bernie moved back to Philadelphia, I was a Bernie Parent fan, not much of a Philadelphia fan, but quite ironic because my minor hockey in the MTHL back there was the Don Mills Flyers, and we had Philadelphia Flyer colors.
Were your parents, your dad, were they all right with the decision? My older brother was a defenseman and then became a goalie. And I remember my dad brought him out in the backyard and started to take shots on him, trying to discourage him. Before he knew it, he was taking slap shots at him. My brother was laughing. Yeah. What was that like for, in your household?
They were really supportive. And like, it was early enough in my hockey career, I was only, what, 6-7 years old. So who knows if I was going to carry it on. And back then, the equipment was supplied by the association. So, you know, secondhand skates I had to get through my dad, but everything else was supplied through the organization, basically right up until I hit Pee Wee, when it got kind of serious and I jumped to the NTHL, because I went through, excuse me, a couple of tiers before I made it to AAA, or major as they call it now, House League, Scarborough Hockey Association, which was kind of like an A-minus league. Mm-hmm. And then went into AA with the Don Valley Villagers, and then from there to the Don Mills Flyers and Pee Wee.
Man, when you were playing for the Don Mills Flyers, the concept of that team, I mean, you weren't the only guy that played in the NHL from that team. You had a team of guys. It became a factory, didn't it?
It did, you know. And then we had, some had a cup of coffee, but there was a couple that went on to have Peter Zezel, I played with, bless his soul. But you're right, a bunch of guys that came through and had, one or two year careers, full careers in the NHL, but also played a long time in American Hockey League. Matthew Desjé, Peter Duras, mm-hmm. Ken Saverin, Gary McColgan. My goalie partners were Sean Evoy, Peter Abrick, Andrew McBain I played with as well. So yes, it was a factory where we kind of took over from the Wexford organization, which were big, especially when they went through and they won the Wrigley's Cup that one year. They I think they had Brian Bellows and a few other players on that team.
When did you know that you could make a living at this game?
That's a good question. I get that. I get asked a lot about that. Along with
that, means it's not a great question.
But. Yeah. Well, it is. I mean, it's a hard one to. I mean, as a kid, you're. I think you're going, well, my dream is to play in the NHL, because growing up in Toronto, the Toronto Maple Leafs were the big thing. My second love is soccer, which I played to a high level as well, just under Peter Zezel, and I guess. You get into midget hockey. Can we call it midget hockey now? I think it's what, U18 or U17.
Yeah. You can call it midget hockey. You can call it.
Yeah. And, that's when things get obviously really serious, because you're receiving letters from colleges in the U.S., colleges, universities in Canada. Then, of course, agents are knocking on your door and trying to come and soliciting and want to give you advice on what to do. I picked the junior route. I played in Oshawa. I think that was, for me, was the best thing. Was college hockey wasn't kind of in the radar for where I was from, and Oshawa being at that time 30-40 minutes down the road, it was a wise decision for me.
So you get drafted in 1984, and over the next couple of years, you play 6 games for the Devils. You're down in Maine, and then you get traded to Vancouver. Were you one of those guys, just like I feel like every one of us was, where you get drafted and you think, I'm spending my entire career with the Devils?
Absolutely. You feel like you're kind of bulletproof. I got called up right out of junior to play my first 2 games, at the end of New Jersey season before they didn't make the playoffs. But, you feel kind of a little cocky, I guess, saying, okay, I held my own. We'll see what happens next year. And, of course, at that time, there was myself, Craig Billington, Chris Terreri, the sacrificial lamb, Alain Chevrier, who they kept it up to take the brunt of the heat, but Chico Rush just retired. Carl Friesen, we just lost Sammy St. Laurent. I got traded to Detroit. So we had a plethora of goaltenders. And of course, Sean Burke was coming up behind us. He's a year behind. And then, 4 or 5 years later, Martin Brodeur. But going into, camp in 1986, 87, we had a plethora of goaltenders, and what we were maybe something was going to happen. It's a good good place to be for teams. Everybody needs a goaltender at some point. The trade is made basically the first day of camp. Max McNabb had retired, and Lou Lamoriello, it was his first year with the team, and we were just about to go for our physicals, and I get a call. I was staying at John McClain's place at the time because we'd gone in early to skate. And I got a call from Bob Hoffmeyer, who was the assistant coach at the time, let me know that Lou wanted to talk to me. I hadn't met Lou yet. So I walk in and it was basically, we've made a trade. You and somebody else is involved. I can't tell you who it is because the fax hasn't gone through yet, all that kind of stuff. And then, of course, I found out who it was on the plane when Greg Adams came walking on.
and who were you traded for?
Patrick Sundstrom.
It was Patrick Sundstrom.
Patrick Sundstrom, yeah. So who was, I guess, a fan favorite here. Him and Tony Tanti had a thing going. And,
yeah,
you know, thank God. Well, you know, he went on and had a pretty good career in New Jersey as well. And, you know, at the time, I think I was kind of a throw-in with Greg Adams. I was an unknown. I played, as Landon mentioned, most of my first year pro down in the minors. So it was actually Bob McCammon and Brian Burke who saw me a lot, because Berkey at the time had just started up his agency, was a player agent, and Bob, I believe, was a scouting for Edmonton, I think. Mm-hmm. He was, but he did have a place down in Portland. You know, as you know, he came through the Philadelphia and Portland. The Maine Mariners used to be Philadelphia's team at one time.
So the reaction to being traded to Vancouver was, I'm going to get a chance to play, or, oh my God, it's a long way from Toronto.
Well, that's pretty much it. I'd never been anywhere past Calgary. I went to the Max Midget Tournament 2 years in a row. Never been to Vancouver. Knew nothing about it other than the fact the 82, obviously the 82 Stanley Cup, or my dad listening to Foster Hewitt on the radio at 10 o'clock at night, the Leafs and Vancouver. That's it. You know, I really didn't have a clue what was about to happen or what I was, or where I was coming. But I tell you what, I was in Greg Adams' ear the whole way here. You know, him being from Nelson,
right.
and you know, it was just fantastic. You know, I can remember we landed in the evening. And it was a beautiful night. And then wake up in the morning, hop on the bus, and off to Duncan for my first training camp here in Vancouver.
So you end up playing 41 games your first year. Like, yeah. What was the messaging when you got there? Did they tell you we're going to give you a chance to take the reins, or was that you just powering through?
I think they were just... They didn't say much at the beginning because we went with a three goalie system for a while. Myself, the King, Richard, and Frank Caprice. Mm-hmm. Frank didn't get a lot of action in, and then was finally sent down to Fredericton, and the King and I kind of alternated. And then at the trading deadline, they moved Richard to Hartford and brought in Steve Weeks, who was fantastic for me. You know, I think they literally brought him in to kind of mentor me, to become a better professional, to be honest with you, because I was still young and dumb, you know, thinking that I was the cat's meow and I didn't, you know, need to practice that much harder or any of that kind of stuff. But he certainly came in and showed me what it was like to be a pro.
By the way, Frank Caprice, would you have played against Caprice when he was in Peterborough?
No, he was already gone.
Yeah. Oh, he was gone. Okay. So yeah. There was no OHL rivalry there.
No. He had a few years on me, so he was already gone.
And did Steve Weeks then basically become there weren't goalie coaches very often around, were
none.
There?
None. We had Caesar. Caesar came in like maybe once every 2 months. he was involved. I think him and his brother had a sports store or something like that, but that was it. You know, Caesar came in literally once, maybe every two months, just to kind of go through a little session. There was no video or really or anything, that kind of stuff. So Weeksy was still, you know, young enough and, you know, wanted to compete to play without a doubt. So there was still some healthy competition there, but, you know, he was certainly a big part of what I needed to learn on how to become a pro goalie.
By the way, you couldn't play the game the way Caesar played it.
those are the guys that I looked up to, right? You know, it was he was the tall goalie for back right. in the day, as you right. know. So, but you know, fantastic goaltender, and you know, we shared the same kind of philosophies in the game, and he knew very well of my mentor, who was a fellow by the name of Ian Young, who was my goalie coach in Oshawa. Who right. played in Oshawa with Bobby Orr and was the next, him and Bobby were the two things coming up to Boston, but an unfortunate eye injury ended his career, but they all played against each other. Caesar was at St. Mike's and Ian was in Oshawa. So they certainly were very familiar with each other.
Yeah. So 89, that playoff series against Calgary in 89, would you define that as your
coming out? Absolutely. I think, you know, it certainly was, because we had a team, a hardworking team. We did have some skill on that team, a lot of skill on that team. But unfortunately, you know, we had some rough seasons. You know, back in those days, you could get in with 80 something points into the playoffs. And we did that. And we gave Calgary a good scare going to game seven. If we had video replay now, would Joel's goal counted?
Was it kicked in?
I claim it was kicked in, but you know, he probably claims it was just, he was going to the net and it went off his skate.
But it did prepare you for 94 though, didn't it?
For sure it did. You know, we went from 89 to 94. We had some really good teams. In the early 90s, you know, we competed for President's Cup a couple of years and lost out near the ends of each season. We had really good, teams, and we underachieved in the playoffs from myself out. You know, we just couldn't get over that hump of the first round or the second round. We'd get past the first round, get in the second round, and we couldn't pull it off. And then we get to 94. You know, we had a lackluster year. We squeaked into the playoffs, I think, with 4 or 5 games left in the season. And then, you know, we go up against Calgary again, who was favored or one of the favorites to win. And, you know, we win the first game and then we go down 3-1. And I don't know, you start doubting yourself. And because I tried not to read papers, there was no social media or listen to the news, you know, can he win the big games or can he take the team to another level? Is he a playoff goalie? All that kind of stuff. And you know, for some reason, you know, the Pat and Ricky Lee and the rest of the coaching staff kept us loose and positive. And it was literally, the cliches came out, one shift of time, one period of time, one game at a time. And that's the way we approached it. And every game we just our confidence kept building and our belief obviously kept building. And if we were going to win it in triple overtime, it didn't matter.
So you get through Calgary in game seven, and then you guys make pretty quick work of Dallas and Toronto. Yeah. Like, once you got past Dallas, was it just like kind of a light bulb moment for your team?
Well, it was. I mean, on the series, you know, winning in five, it seems like we made quick. They were tough series, though. Yeah. You know, it's not easy to win, as you guys know, in the National Hockey League, and there, it's a grind. You know, especially in playoffs, it's back then super physical, clutching, grabbing, but fast skating, fast moving, long games, and you know, the fact that, you know, we were able to pull it off in five games, both of them, you know, Toronto as well, was amazing. And for me, was a big sigh of relief getting past Dallas. And then, you know, kind of a big, uh-oh, we're going into Toronto here, hometown. Never had any success at Maple Leaf Gardens even through junior hockey when we played the Marlies. The only success I think was when I played the Timmy Tyke finals and we won it. That was it. And ironically won the Ian Young goaltending award. So I didn't know what to expect, you know, and of course the first two games we split, I had good games and then we come back and win the three in a row here in Vancouver. It was fantastic.
Yeah. Well, of course, that was the old days of the 2-3-2 you're talking about.
Was it the 1 year? I think they only did it the 1 year and that was it.
Well, they and basically at a certain point, the teams would have a choice.
Mm-hmm.
And
the team with the better
record
had the choice of starting on the road or at home.
Yeah. It's the way the American League still goes.
Is it? Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, I remember when I first got here, we played best 3 out of 5 in the first series, and then there was too many upsets, so they changed it because they wanted the better team. They thought the better teams could, you know, if it went to 4 out of 7, the cream would rise to the top.
Kirk, I got a date. The first series I ever produced for Hockey Night in Canada was a Philadelphia Vancouver series. It was best 2 out of 3.
Wow!
And can you imagine best 2 out of 3 with travel?
Yeah.
It's not as if Philadelphia is next door.
So. No, this is true, and not easy to get to.
Well, we used to take that. I ended up traveling with the Canucks that year. And Jake Milford was the manager. And I said, Jake, is there any way I can get on your. They had air. It used to be called Air Putt Putt. It was Air Ontario.
Yeah.
And you'd fly because it was a propeller plane because Toronto had rules. You couldn't land after midnight with a jet. Okay. Yeah. And then we'd stay overnight in Toronto and then fly out in the morning. It was crazy.
Yeah. And they, you know, I believe when I first started in playoffs, we went back to back in playoffs too.
Oh, sure.
With a day off and then back to back.
Yeah. Two games somewhere, day off, two games the other building. Yeah. That's right. Yeah.
Which I think is fantastic, you know, because you want to play, right? I mean, the adrenaline's running, you know, you're beat up and all that kind of stuff, but you want to get back, especially if you lose. You don't want to wait a day. You want to get out there and play the next day.
Better than practice.
Well, yeah, it's practice. We practice. Don't believe me. We practice in the playoffs.
Like, is it almost like you get that day off and it gives you time to think about how sore you are? Like, you just want to keep rolling at that point.
Totally agree. I mean, you know, like I said, most guys back then didn't have the best habits. If there was a sign of a day off, the night before was probably a fun night. And then it always catches up with you two days later, right? So, you know, that's the difference again with the players now. They're pretty good. They can, you know, they pick their spots a lot better than what we did.
So you get to game one against the Rangers and you make 52 of 54 saves. You know, Leach hits a crossbar, goes back the other way. Ronning makes the pass. Adams gets a goal.
Yeah.
You always see the goalie sprinting down the ice to join the celebration. You kind of slowly meandered up. What was going through your head?
Well, I'm just was glad it was over. I was tired, like, you know, you couldn't believe it. And mentally tired more than anything. Right. Hmm. You know, we played a hard game and then, for that specific chance for us to get the 2-on-1 off of a nice bounce off the crossbar, you know, and then Cliffy to have his vision and catch Mike Richter so far out when he passed it across, you know, Gussie one time did into the empty net, but it was just a big sigh of relief. I don't know if I could have sprinted down the other end. My pads probably weighed about 1,000 pounds at that time, even though they were still the new synthetic type of, stuffing in the pads. Right. But I was knackered, that's for sure.
Was the garden, was Madison Square Garden the most intimidating arena to play in, or was there one that jumped out at you? You said you didn't like Maple Leaf Gardens, but...
Maple Leaf Gardens was intimidating because of what it was all about and you know, family and all that kind of stuff. And the egg-shaped corners and the worst lighting in the world, you know, TV lights on one side and, you know, as of Montreal was the same thing. MSG, I didn't find it intimidating. I enjoyed playing there. The New York crowd is is crazy. As you know, they can be ruthless, not just with the visiting team, but with the home team. But they do really respect a good effort by any athlete. If you put a good effort out, and you know, they'll appreciate that. And it was more the off days and dealing with, you know, Pavel had to deal with, you know, death threats, all that kind of stuff. Yeah. And you try to, you know, the ringer off your hotel phones, people calling you in the mornings and all that kind of stuff. But, you know, I loved it. I loved playing there. I didn't find the only rink I found, well, maybe two, Edmonton, obviously going into Edmonton with who they had on their team, and maybe Pittsburgh. I could really? Pittsburgh, for some reason, I couldn't get my bearings right in there, my angles, nothing, and never had, you know, good games there as well.
Of course,
the two players in particular that were pretty intimidating.
By the way, you do know that they in Pittsburgh they cheated and moved the goal line out, so Mario had more room behind the net.
Oh yeah, but they also
angles probably were never the same, right?
Yeah, you're probably right. I mean, and then you know Philadelphia at the one end they deaden the boards for Hexie so he could come out and play it. I think it was in Buffalo. Guy behind. On the visiting, because we went out where the Zamboni came out, so the guy would kick it. So
oh, sure.
The wrapper, all that kind of stuff. That was the joy of the old school home rinks. I mean, right. Every rink was different for the most part. Teams built their teams for the specific ice surface and rink, and you know now it's all generic and everything's pretty much the same.
You mentioned Pavel. What was it like to watch him play on a nightly basis?
Well, it was pretty spectacular. I remember playing him for the first time in the World Championships in 1990. He hadn't come over, but there was a rumor about this. I think he was 17 or 18. He had to wear a full cage in the World Championships back then. And, you know, I got a glimpse of them. And then, you know, a year later, two later, we found out he's coming to Vancouver. And then, of course, he arrives in Vancouver, you know, his speed and just his joy for the game, his want to score goals, everything was infectious. And that first shift or second shift he was on, and I set the puck up for him and he just comes flying by and goes end to end. And we knew we were in for quite a haul with this guy. And, you know, he was an awesome player without a doubt. You know, it's too bad that his career got cut short with knee injuries. You know, he was really the McDavid of now as far as excitement and being able to do things at high speed, you know, stick handle in a phone booth or whatever you want. But he was also super physical, as we all know. You know, he stood up for himself, but he certainly took a beating because he loved to score goals. And you know, he was a wonderful teammate. He took a bad rap, I think, because he wasn't very sociable. He wasn't, out there in the community doing a lot of stuff, or, you know, he found it tough with the media sometimes, but, you know, when he was amongst us, he was one of the guys. He loved pulling the pranks. He loved to, you know, go for a couple of drinks, or whatever it may be, lunches, dinners. And, you know, him and Gino had their special relationship, and, you know, we knew they were both going to be there for us. So after whatever team meetings we had, if they wanted to go do their own thing, there was no bother about that because we knew they were going to be there the next day doing it for us.
Yeah. So I got it. Oh, sorry. Go for
no,
it.
No, no, no. You go, Leonard.
I was just going to say, like, you know, I was lucky enough to get to play in one game seven with Detroit, and I was young and my head was all over the place. Like, you've always thought about it. It's so different for goalies, or at least in my head, I assume that it is. What were your thoughts? I mean, you played other ones before that, but in the finals,
Stanley Cup finals,
it's a little bit different.
For sure. I mean, again, you're getting to you've got that far to the finals. You've been through some other game sevens through, you know, the first series and then, you know, years past. But, you know, all of it's on the line for that one holy grail that you've dreamt about your whole life. To get. And you know, my feeling is, and everybody else is, we were so close knit. You know, we got to that point, everybody's feeling good. I think you're more nervous away from the rink than you are at the rink, because you can't control anything when you're away from the rink. As soon as you get to the rink, you can control what goes on. You can whatever that may be in the locker room or out in the ice. So it's a little bit more at ease. But for any goalie on any night, not just Game 7 of the Stanley Cup Finals, there's a little bit of nerves after the national anthems. You know, to get that first feel of the puck, that first shot, you're just kind of hoping it's not going to be an important one, if you will. You know, even sometimes the long wristers from the blue line, you just want to make sure you get your body in front of it, because it's that one little feel that kind of gets you into the game.
Do you play against the other goalie? Really? Do you really compete against the other guy at the other end of the ice?
I never looked at it that way. I looked at it, our team against their team, but I know goalies that do. They want to compete against the other goaltender. I'm assuming that, you know, one center against another center, or our best players against their best players.
Yeah, but being a skater is different. Being a skater is a different. You're always 180 feet away from the other guy.
Yeah, exactly. You know, I never approached it that way. I just approached it, you know, I want to do my job. I always broke the game, tried to break the game down into five-minute mini games, and then go from there. I was more worried about trying to win the 5-minute mini games rather than focus on how many saves he's made and how many saves I need to make, or if he made a big save down there, you know, stuff like that. If he made a big save down the other end, then of course you're like, okay, they're going to come down. I gotta pull something off here as well.
You know, your people love you in Vancouver. I got to see it again for the home opener this year. And then you and Trevor came up and did your guys' little interview up top. You must, like, this series against the Rangers must get brought up to you multiple times a week. Does it ever get old, or do you love to relive that with fans?
Yeah, I like to relive it, because, you know, along with that, and of course the Calgary series, the save, all that kind of stuff comes up, and how can you get tired of it? You know, it was defining moments of my career. Yes, we were bridesmaids, and it was disappointing to us because you play to win, right? You get all that way and we lose. So what did we get out of it? We got experience out of it. That was it. We didn't accomplish anything other than a conference trophy. But, to sit and talk with the fans and the people of Vancouver, because, you know, they went through something, a ride that was incredible, and you know, they stopped their weddings, or, you know, babies being born, whatever it may have been, and they're telling their story about, you know, what it meant to them, and it's an amazing thing. I have to say, sometimes I don't get it. Like, if there's a bunch of us from 94, we're kind of like very humbled at why the community, wherever it may be, still gravitate to that 94 team. I don't, 2011 team, my gosh, they had an unbelievable team. I for sure thought they were going to pull it off. 82 team had a bunch of characters, and they were a Cinderella story, came out of nowhere. Great goaltending, obviously, by Richard as well. But I don't know if it's the age group where everybody seems to just want to, I don't know why. To be honest with you, I can't figure it out. We're dumbfounded sometimes why people just want to kind of gather and talk about the early 90s or the 94 team in specific.
All right. Listen, it was, well, you're a Toronto boy. They talk about 93 and 94 in Toronto, and they didn't even get to the Stanley Cup final.
Yeah. Well, listen, they had fantastic players, you know, Wendell and Dougie Gilmore.
Yeah.
Anderchuk, I mean, you can go down the line. They were a powerhouse without a doubt. Felix in goal, it was tough. It really was. And as you guys know, you know, they're starving for another Stanley Cup. There, I think, well, they are they got to be the longest drought right now going on, I would think.
Yeah, so, you're probably right. So tomorrow night, Saturday night, Montreal's coming to town. There'll be 18,000 people in the crowd, and there'll be 8,000 Canadians fans there. When you were playing in Vancouver,
there was 14,000 Canadian fans. and Leaf fans.
So when Toronto and Montreal come to town, there, because we saw it Thursday night. We saw it Thursday night at Edmonton as well. Lennon was on the show. We saw it that, I mean, the following that the old two Canadian teams have is mind-boggling at times. But when you're sitting, when you're in the crease and your home game and there's half the crowds cheering for the other team, what would go through your mind?
It's a little disappointing, but, you know, it's understandable.
Oh, you were pissed off when you were playing.
Well, really pissed off, to be honest with you. You know, you tune it out at some point. Especially if it's a close game, you really have to tune it out. It's tough if you're losing, and if you're losing by a big score, because then it gets worse, right? Because it gives you it definitely gives you a little bit more motivation to beat them. You know, you try to understand why there's so many Canadians or Leaf fans there. Most of it, you figured out, okay, the grandparents or the parents that are, you know, back in the original six days, that's that's who they had to cheer for, or they've moved from Ontario or Quebec and moved out here, so they continue it on. But it's the younger kids that really don't know anything about it. They've grown up in Vancouver, but they're just doing it because their mom or their grandparents support that team. But you know, you see, you know, I watched a little bit of that Edmonton game, and it's kind of odd even there. Listen, Montreal's doing well this year, so maybe the bandwagons are going to come out a little bit more, which seems to be happening. But we're finding, you know, that other Canadian teams going back east, whether it be into Toronto or Montreal, there's a lot of support for Vancouver, Edmonton now, you know, Winnipeg or whatever, which is great. So it shows you where the game's in a good place. There's hockey fans everywhere, and they're not afraid to support the team that they want to support. It's not, you wish they support their home team more, but, you know, they're supporting hockey in general, and I'm good with that.
Last question to you, Landon.
Well, you know, you do quite a bit of charity work in Vancouver, and, you know, I was fortunate enough to get to play in the Canucks Autism Network tournament with you last week, which, by the way, the one time I looked over when you were playing, you pulled off a pretty nice toe drag. Like, you're a half decent player out there. You're feeling it.
Well, listen, I love playing out. I haven't played goal since the day I retired. You know, at the beginning, I was actually playing center. As now, I just drop back and kind of move the puck and let the younger guys do it. But, you know, I enjoy it. You know, when I was younger, when I played shinny hockey or whatever, I'd skate around, work on my stick handling skills, my puck handling skills. You know, I took pride in that when I played as a goaltender, as a puck moving goaltender. I used to toe drag or look guys off when I handled the puck as a goalie. So I'd like to think I have some pretty good hockey sense. The speed isn't quite there, but like I said, I try to move it as fast as I can. It's fun. A lot of goalies do that. And I've played against Billy Ranford plays out. So he's blocked shots, believe it or not. Like, he'll lay down and block shots. He's crazy. But he can skate well. Eddie Lack played last year in the Cannes tournament. And he can skate like the wind, believe it or not. Has great hands, great shot. Cujo plays out. Marty Turco plays out. Belfour, everybody plays out. And I think you get to the point, it hurts, right? I mean, and if you're an alumni goaltender or you're playing in these tournaments, the pressure is always on the goaltender, no matter what level at. And then, of course, if you're an NHL or a retired NHL, there's going to be more, because everybody's trying to score on you, and you're thinking, is nobody's going to score on me? So you don't want to be embarrassed, and you've gone your whole 35 plus years of playing goaltender, and it wears on you mentally. Last thing you want to do is be out there and having to worry about being scored on, never mind hurting yourself.
that's like goalies wanting to be skaters is like rock stars always want to be athletes, and athletes always want to be rock stars. So
absolutely, that's exactly what it is. The odd the odd guy, the odd forward or defenseman doesn't mind going in the net until he takes one, you know, where it hurts. And then it's like, okay, I've had enough of that. Yeah.
My first year when I retired, my buddy Martin Jones does like a family fun game every summer. And I had no interest in putting my gear on, but all of a sudden me and him switch gear. So I went in net for the first time ever. But you had no one to talk to in there. It's pretty boring, but it's a lot.
And that's where the mental side of the game, because you have to keep concentrating on what's going on. You don't have time to really sit back and you know, think about what's for dinner that night. But you know, I put the gear on 4 or 5 years ago when we had an anniversary, 50 years I think it was for the club, and I had to skate out to the blue line from the Zamboni. And that was the longest skate I've ever done in my life because one, it's the first time I had goalie skates on in 20 years or whatever. Two, I had Dan Cloutier's old goalie skates. I had a firefighter who Pat O'Neill had found on Facebook that had a replica look of my old gear. And it was still the new age goalie gear, which I had to learn how to skate with the night before, and the morning of, I was out skating around the ice trying to get used to all this stuff. I had, I don't even know whose pants I had on. I had a friend of mine's body armor on, a shorter guy who played goal, because I tried on at that time the Canuck goalies, and I put it on. I looked like an idiot. Like, it didn't even look like me. I couldn't even move. And
looked like a kid wearing your dad's jacket type of deal.
Basically, that's what it was. So I used my friend's body armor, and then my mask was mine. The gloves were the firefighters, and the stick was mine. The stick Patty O'Neill pulled out from, you know, the bowels of the arena, and actually had I signed it to him, so I had my signature on it. So,
and it probably weighed 5 pounds more than the goalie sticks now.
Oh yeah, it was. And I talked to all the other guys. You know, Stan Schmeel, Dennis Kearns came out, and everybody did the same thing. They all went out the night before, skated somewhere. I actually just went to the arena and did it. Dennis Kearns, I think he went to Hollyburn and went out with a walker at first to get his balance before he geared up to go out there. So it was quite interesting, of course. And then you get to the blue line and you know, everything kicks in. You're like, I don't want to get off here. This is, we want to play, you know. I looked at Steamer was standing beside me, and Troy Stetcher was on the other side of me. Stetcher's just freaking out, going, this is awesome. This is amazing. And then Steamer and I look at each other and go, you want to line up? I was going to go on the net, and he was going to, that would have been so cool if that would have happened.
Hey, this has been great, Kirk. Thanks for the time.
Well, thanks for finally making it happen and continued success with your podcast.
Great. That's Kirk McLean. Len and I'll be back after this on 100% Canucks.
Face-Off Inside the NHL returns, taking you deeper behind the scenes than ever before. See it all from the star-studded Four Nations Face-Off Tournament.
Us against the world, boys.
To the adrenaline of the Stanley Cup playoffs.
I'm scared of you guys.
With candid interviews and backstage access, experience the sacrifice, the rivalries, and the determination that define NHL greatness.
Just when I thought last year couldn't be topped, here we are.
A new season of Face-Off Inside the NHL. Watch now only on Prime Video.
You know, I was worried when we booked Kirk that we might get 20 minutes, but Kirk enjoys telling stories. That's nice.
Yeah, like I mentioned at the end of the interview there, I got to play in that CAN tournament with him, and watching him hold court in a dressing room and just be back in his element, it's awesome. It's so fun to see all the guys that, you know, had played before me and guys that are more recently retired kind of back in one area. And man, like, he's just firing it out there. He's got a big smile on the entire time. He's got minutes to talk to every single person that was a part of that weekend. You know, for me, not that I needed to see it again, but it's another reminder of why he's such a big figure in Vancouver Canucks, in the organization and around the city. He loves this team. He loved his time. He still lives here, and he genuinely enjoys talking to fans and making sure they have a good moment when they get that with him.
And it's funny, you know, maybe it's the guys we're talking to. You know, Chris Higgins was raised on Long Island. Tony Tanti was raised in Southern Ontario, as was Kirk. And they have made no bones about it that they want to live in the Lower Mainland. They want to live in Vancouver. They love what the West Coast offers. It is really one of the great storylines of what the Canucks have meant, not to the fans, but to the players, and getting to know what a great city Vancouver is. There are those of us that think it's the greatest city in the world. We're biased. We grew up there. We believe in it. But it's when people who have been, you know, for work reasons, moved to Vancouver and then they stay, is that's the real endorsement you get about the city in my mind.
Yeah, I mean, just from my own experience, we moved to Vancouver when my dad retired. We had no family ties to Vancouver. We're from Trail, BC. It's, you know, a 7-hour drive east. And even as a 10-year-old coming into this city, it just felt different. You know, I was lucky. I got to live in Atlanta and LA, and not that I really remember New York, but got to be a New York guy for a little bit. Vancouver is a different place. It's, I mean, it's aesthetically beautiful, but the fact that, you know, from where I live, I can be at the beach in 15 minutes. I can be at Grouse Mountain in 5 minutes. Like, where else do you get that type of access? And then on top of it, the people are great. You feel welcome right away. And for the guys that move here for work, they feel that right when they get here. And it's a tough place to leave. Once you start setting those little bit of roots, they grow pretty quick.
Once you're a British Columbian, you're a British Columbian.
Yeah. When you think you're out, they pull you back in, right?
I just tell people I live in exile. All right, Landon, we'll talk to you next week.
All right, sounds good. Have a good one, everyone.
Thanks for listening and watching this edition of 100% Canucks.
Looking for more than just pain relief? At Ability Chiropractic, they help your body do what it was designed to do, heal naturally. Their doctors focus on spinal and nervous system alignment to restore balance, energy, and overall wellness. From infants to grandparents, families across Columbus are discovering that true healing starts from within, not from a prescription bottle. Experience what natural healing can do for you. Book your appointment today at abilitychiro.com.
You ain't heard about Moto Casino? Moto has real Vegas slots. Any game you can find on the floor in Vegas, you can play it on Moto. I like my slots hot. Moto's free to play, like food stamps. In line at the grocery store, at a funeral, in traffic. Keep your eyes on the road. Hop on Moto Casino. Moto Casino got jackpots that are bigger than my belly. Moto, America's hottest free-to-play social casino.
Download the Moto Casino app today. Moto Casino is a social casino. Void where prohibited. No purchase necessary. Visit Moto.us for more details.
Moto Casino. America's social casino.
CODA salutes those who served. Veterans Ride Free Tuesday, November 11th. And every other day of the year, our veterans and active duty military personnel get a 50% discount on all fares. It's all part of CODA's ongoing commitment to show appreciation for your selfless service. To ride at no cost on fixed routes, tell your bus operator that you're a veteran or use code VET2025 in the app to use CODA Plus. Veterans Ride Free on Tuesday, November 11th for Veterans Day. Veterans get a 50% discount every day on CODA. Plan your ride and learn more at CODA.com/trip planner.